Welcome to the Your Gateway to Wealth and Fulfillment podcast. I'm Andrew Kittleson.
And I'm Candace Klein. We're financial advisors at UBS Financial Services. We're excited to introduce our guest speaker, Harry Simons, with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Today, we're going to talk about artificial intelligence.
Harry, we've seen a lot of market expectation the last couple of years around AI. Can we start with just how do we get here? And where are we in the cycle?
Yeah, there's been a ton of excitement over the last couple of years. Really all kicked off in November of 2022. We get, you know, OpenAI launches ChatGPT. They get 100 million users in 2 months, which at that point was the fastest time for any app, any platform to hit that milestone. Previously, it was TikTok. That was 9 months. So you can see really how much excitement there was for AI. That was really, there were years and really decades leading up to that, a lot of innovation in the technology, different types of models being used in AI, eventually the innovation of the transformer model. But it was really ultimately about compute. We had these, you know, GPUs, which we're all very familiar with now, that were really great for gaming, and as it turned out, they're really great for AI as well. So. Over a long period of time, we saw the cost of compute has come down. Its cost per transistor is down 99 point a bunch of nines percent since 1950. Eventually we were able to get to a point where, companies, these research labs, AI labs like OpenAI, were able to find these models and really ultimately package them. In a way that, you know, they could put them in the public's hands. And we've seen, you know, like I said, a ton of interest, 100 million users in 2 months. I actually just saw today that of the top 10 most visited websites in the U.S. in April, the only one to actually grow month over month was ChatGPT. So, yeah, since then, really since November of 22, most of that of the cycle so far has been, you know, really in that upfront investment cycle. We're really in that, you know, investment sort of stage of everything. But we think it's still early innings. We're still in that early process. We're in a lot of investment in what we call the enabling layer, which, you know, I'm sure we'll unpack at some point. But really it's early stages. We think this is a, you know, long-term investment opportunity, a lot of value creation that's gonna come from this, but over a very prolonged period of time.
So, you were just mentioning an investment standpoint. What is that opportunity, and how do you seize it?
Yeah. The investment. This was one of the biggest questions, I think, early on. Like I said, fall of 2022. When ChatGPT comes out and this excitement begins, and then, you know, through 2023 and, you know, really through now, we've seen all this upfront investment. Early on, that's one of the things that really everyone was trying to do, whether it be, research franchises like our own in the Chief Investment Office, our counterparts in, you know, sell-side research, and also even management consultants and other technology companies. Everyone was trying to sort of take a stab at this, like, how big can this thing really become? The only sort of signal we had was we knew that, a lot of these really large technology companies that we like to say are, you know, these are the smartest people in the room. They're putting up so much money against this. There's obviously something that they see. So we took a stab at it ourselves. We put out a white paper on AI in June of last year. We think that the annual value creation opportunity, the annual revenue opportunity, can surpass $1 trillion by 2027. So we've seen a lot of ranging estimates. I think part of the point is, you know, there's not really, it's impossible to get a number right, but yeah. Magnitude, you know, wise, we see the direction it's going, we can see some idea of magnitude. We know it's very large. There was a piece around that time that some partners put out from A16Z, the venture capital firm, and their line was it's you know, in terms of the investment opportunity, it's hard to grasp, but somewhere from all of software to all human endeavors, which is maybe an exaggerated line, but really puts in perspective how big this opportunity could become.
I think you'll hear us continue to say, tell us more. Can you elaborate a bit more on this concept of TRIO inside of the Chief Investment Office and how this is, a transformational opportunity like we haven't seen before?
Yeah, I mentioned this paper that we put out in June. That was the kickoff of artificial intelligence as, like you said, a TRIO, a transformational innovation opportunity. We now have three such opportunities that we like to talk about in the Chief Investment Office. But the foundation of what a TRIO is and why AI is one, we looked back at wealth creation and really long-term equity market returns over a long period of time. There's a paper that we found that we've referenced back in this paper that we put out that I'm talking about from June of last year. And one of the things, one of the findings from that paper was that from 1990 through 2020, about 1% of global firms drove more than 80% of all wealth creation in the equity markets. In the U.S., it's about 2.4 of companies that drove 100% of wealth creation over that time period from 1990 to 2020. And we obviously know that over the past few years, there's been a ton of consolidated wealth creation as well. The Mag 7 drove about 50% of returns in the S&P 500 last year. And so when we look at these types of companies that were responsible for those long-term equity returns, one of the things we find is that they're often tied to structural transformations and very often technological innovations. So the top three of those companies from 1990 through 2020, those are large technology companies tied to major themes like the internet, like mobile computing, just general computing, cloud computing, and even more of the top 10. And if you go back even before these more recent tech cycles, I mean, the invention of the open hearth furnace in the 1860s, I mean, by 1920, a third of the Dow Jones was, steel companies, because that innovation enabled the mass production of steel. Later on in the 1800s, we had the first automobiles and the, Benz patent motor car. And then by, 1930, a third of the index is, car companies. And of course, now we're, sitting here with 40% of the S&P 500 market cap, whatever it is, being, technology and communication services companies. So point being, over a prolonged period of time, we've seen significant value creation in the equity markets come from companies that were leading the way and taking advantage of these transformational innovations. And we think AI is one such innovation, and we think that's going to drive returns over the coming decades.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So how much exposure should investors have to each of these layers into the overall AI, or what's the overall AI investment opportunity?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier the enabling layer. So that when we, when we laid out our sizing of the investment opportunity in our TRIO launch, like I said, we think surpasses $1 trillion in annual value creation by 2027, $1.16 trillion was the number that we put out. But there's a few different ways you can think about the overall investment opportunity. The way that we ultimately did it was thinking about AI in these three layers. The enabling layer is the first layer. This is where the infrastructure lives. We're talking about the chips, the GPUs, some of the data center investment, the networking, some of these sort of hardware-oriented components of the AI opportunity. So that's in that first layer. The second layer is the intelligence layer. We sort of think of this as the brain of AI. This is where the models live. We've been talking about large language models or really this Gen AI innovation that we've been talking about that kicked off all this excitement, and that's a software layer. And then the third layer is the application layer, which is also a software layer. And this is ultimately where things like AI agents and assistants and co-pilots are going to live. And so the application layer runs, you know, on top of the intelligence layer. So the models power these applications and the software, and they rely on, you know, the data that they're using, that they're trained on, or that they're inferencing with. And so to date, we've seen a lot of investment and excitement in the enabling layer, in our AI portfolio, which is part of the Trio. That's where we've been the most exposed since launching. We continue to be the most exposed in that layer. But in the long run, we ultimately think that the application layer is going to be the most monetized. If you think about sort of now, you know, with the internet, you know, what are the companies we think of as internet companies? They're maybe not the companies that built the internet, but they're the companies that have really in the application side that have taken hold of the internet and used it to their advantage. So, and that's somewhat representative of how the IT sector is today. There's roughly, you know, four times as much market cap in software as there is hardware. But, you know, we think investors should be exposed to really all three layers, mm-hmm. And, you know, be prepared for opportunities in each. But yeah, in the long run, you know, whether it's in the enabling layer, the intelligence layer, or the application layer, the companies that are, you know, that are executing the best are, you know, going to be the ones where, you know, the best opportunities lie. But you know, it's easy to talk about these, you know, three layers sort of the way that we think about them and the way we've presented them, but I'd love to get a sense maybe from you. I mean, how do clients in your conversations, you know, how does this resonate? How do they think about the investment opportunity? And maybe how has that changed? How has some thinking from the investor side about the AI investment opportunity changed over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And the general answer is it's a bit all over the board. We have clients that have been around since the dot-com era and will want to, you know, kind of potentially compare this to the dot-com era. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on that. And then also the excitement. We have clients that are building some of these data centers that are in the energy space. And so they really see it, and they see the energy demand, and we're, you know, an excitement in the opportunity generally. Some nervousness or reservations around what does this mean, you know, for the workforce. So I think we're getting, you know, we've got a lot of different viewpoints from different clients. From our perspective, it's a very fast-changing, you know, market. And the way we like to implement it in client portfolios is our digital transformation portfolio, which will look at straight tech companies, but also some of those other industries and the leaders within those industries that are using these technologies and enabling them. So kind of ahead of the curve, whether it's in financial services or healthcare. So that's how we'll implement it into portfolios, but it's definitely becoming more and more of a conversational piece.
When you were talking about the three layers and the application piece,
yeah,
can you elaborate a little bit more about what those are and are businesses ready for them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah, the applications, it really varies a lot, I think, by industry. Different companies within different industries are adopting AI in different ways. I think very much from what we've heard is that a lot of companies are sort of in the experimentation phase right now. As much as, you know, it's easy to say, you know, you're going to adopt AI, you want to include AI in your business, knowing exactly, you know, what you can do, what you should do, is, you know, sort of its own issue. You know, thinking how can I adopt this technology to drive better productivity within my business? And then also, you know, what's the best way to go about that? Where do I need to, you know, find a company that can help build this solution? Do I need to hire someone that can help us build this solution? Is there, you know, a company where I can go, you know, sort of just, you know, pay and it's like plug and play and they just figure it out for you. I think one of the most common applications of AI we've seen for companies to date is in software development. And we've heard this really across industries. Even some of the, you know, very large technology companies that are leading a lot of this investment in AI, they themselves have talked about how much code is actually already being written. by AI using some of these developer tools. I was actually talking to someone who is a software developer at one of these companies, and they actually couldn't name which developer tools were their favorite or that they were using because they literally have so many available to them. But we've heard some pretty staggering numbers. Venture capital firm that's a big startup incubator recently said that one of their recent batches of companies, 25% of them said that 95% or more of their code bases were AI generated. And this is, you know, for a lot of these companies, this is, you know, AI written code. It's accepted by the software developer, by the engineer, and then it's implemented. But it's a pretty big increase when it comes from, you know, zero. It was zero before that. Everything was written from scratch. To the second part of your question about our businesses ready for these applications, there's really no, it's not a yes or no, it's mixed, but we've heard a lot that, you know, for a lot of companies, the answer is no, because they, you know, they don't have their data estates in order. You know, you need data for the AI applications to run on, and the data needs to be organized in a way and structured in a way that the applications can easily run on it. So there's a lot of smaller companies, for example, that you know, they run everything on-prem. They don't have all their data in the cloud. So it's going to be very difficult for them to run some of these AI workloads that are being hosted by, you know, cloud providers, for example. And there's a lot of investment up front that's needed for some of these companies to really start actually taking on AI. So, but, you know, adoption trends for companies large and small, both, you know, SMBs and also large enterprises are looking very strong right now. So we think that, you know, as companies think about IT budgets and, you know, how they're going to invest in their own business, you know, we've heard AI is definitely, you know, one of those top priorities. It's up there with, you know, recent surveys have shown that for companies, you know, cybersecurity and AI are two of the big priorities. So it's, that's how important it is for these companies to get AI ready, as we call it.
Yeah, I'm wondering if these businesses will feel like they're being left behind if they don't adopt it.
Yeah, definitely. I think in a lot of industries, I mean, and I think this is true with past technology cycles. You know, if you don't adopt a technology that, and we're talking about a technology here that is, you know, the point of investing in AI and adopting AI in your business is to drive productivity, which, you know, in turn should lead to better profit margins. So in any industry, you know, if you're not adopting a technology that your competitors are and they're out earning you, you may get competed away.
So, and along that theme and keeping up, you mentioned agents earlier in our conversation.
Yeah.
And we host business owner roundtable dinners, and our most recent one had a tech entrepreneur who exited his first AI company and has now started his second, and it has AI agents. So we, you know, we were diving deep into this topic about a week ago, and it was, you know, the most probably interesting topic amongst the group. Tell us a little bit more about agentic AI, AI agents, and how that differs from the products we've been using the last couple of years.
Yeah, we're only a few years in. You have someone who started not one but two AI companies.
Yeah,
agentic AI has been a very, you know, hot sort of buzzword somewhat recently, sort of more in the past year, and especially over the last couple quarters. A lot of the AI, the Gen AI that we've been talking about today is, you know, again, coming back to ChatGPT, it's this chatbot format we often call, you know, one turn AI. You prompt it, you send a question in, or a thought or a task, you know, give me the answer to this, summarize this, etc., and you get a response. One of the big developments that we saw in the last year is this sort of next iteration of these models, which is the advanced reasoning model. And what these advanced reasoning models do is rather than sort of optimizing for, you know, what's the best response I can provide you in the shortest amount of time, these models will actually think for a little bit of time. And some of them, they actually, when you prompt them, it will say in parentheses next to it, you know, thinking, and tell you, you know, how long it's been thinking. And what that does is it's added another component to really the quality and accuracy of the response it can provide. So it can think for longer, it can think about a complex problem, it can provide you a more logically thought out answer. Agentic AI is really a system that combines these two types of models. So if you think of it as sort of the system one, system two, from the book Thinking Fast and Slow, where you have, you know, there's sort of a fast mode, you know, thinking fast, instinctively providing an answer, and then there's the slow, you know, more thought out, deliberate answer. An agentic system combines both of these, and in doing so, is able to do a series of tasks instead of just one task. So, for example, there are agents for research where you can, you know, prompt, go, you know, tell me about artificial intelligence, focus on the investment opportunity and some of the concerns that investors should have, and then come back to me and present the three most important takeaways and put it in a, you know, slide format. And using, you know, different types of models combined, that agent can go and do that. And so we've seen a lot of excitement recently around agents, this idea of a system that can be automated to complete multiple tasks rather than just respond to one prompt. So we've seen a lot of excitement about agents. There was a recent survey that found 93% of companies surveyed are either already actively putting agents in place or plan to do in the next 2 to 3 years. And so it was really only 7% of companies that sort of had no interest in doing it. So it's, there's a lot of excitement around this. This is sort of the type of AI we think about where, you know, a lot of automation and then a lot of productivity increase can happen, because this is, you know, you don't need to be sitting there all day with the AI, you know, saying, you know, do this, but it can autonomously be able to, you know, accept and handle tasks, things like customer support, for example, doing something that's, you know, repetitive processes, like you know, handling tickets, resetting passwords, and so those are some of the early applications we've seen for agentic AI. But yeah,
it's gonna be interesting to see where it goes. Yeah, over the next handful of years.
Yeah,
it's moving so rapidly.
Yes, I'm hearing a lot about productivity and efficiency. Does the CIO expect a significant impact to the labor market with all these efficiencies being put into place?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's been one of the big questions, since the get-go. One of the views we hold is that, you know, every cycle of technological innovation has brought with it some fear that, you know, automation is going to replace jobs, and that the new technology is going to, you know, machines will take over, right? Mm-hmm. Machines will replace everyone. There were computer companies, manufacturing computers in the 70s that were literally advertising, saying, you know, our computer will replace your lazy staff. And so that's been a very real concern in every tech cycle. Our view is that, you know, AI will replace or destroy jobs, but it will also create jobs. There are some statistics out there that suggest currently, you know, we're still net positive. We've had more jobs created because of AI than destroyed, but it's definitely going to vary, I think, by industry. There's a few different ways to sort of think about, you know, the labor side of things. You know, we think that ultimately, you know, AI, like other tech innovations, it should drive enhanced productivity. And so there can be different effects on the labor market in the long run. For example, an example of a sort of hypothetical, you know, indirect effect is if you think about sort of the shift of demand patterns. So we included a piece about this in the white paper that we put out that I've referenced from last June. But for example, if AI makes everyone more productive and a typical worker then has more leisure time, would we see more jobs created in, leisure related industries, which is, it's sort of a thought provoking, like, okay, that's, sort of one way that things could unfold. But again, coming back to it, we talk about these past cycles of tech innovation, the first industrial revolution created mechanics, the most recent ones, created software engineers, right? Like we are going to need people who, one, we'll need people who still build computers for AI, but we'll need people that ask the right questions and whatnot. So we think this is a, we'll see what happens in the long run.
Right.
It's going to be industry specific, but we don't expect any, immediate short term, AI is taking everyone's jobs. Sort of thing.
It's just people seem to be afraid of the unknown and change a lot of times. And
there's a lot unknown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's human nature, right?
Yeah.
And we've seen a ton of investment, right, the last few years, whether it's in the public markets, private markets. But what about the returns, the monetization?
Yeah, that's been, again, another one of the big debates. We're sitting here now. It's been almost 3 years since this investment cycle kicked off. We've seen over $300 billion invested in AI capex and capital expenditures. We think only maybe 60 of that was in 2023. So a lot of investment last year and so far this year. We recently updated our estimates. We think that CapEx grows again this year and grows again in 2026. But one of the big questions is, where are the returns? All these companies are investing so much money into AI, and what's the return that they're getting? So I think early on, everyone was looking for, where are the AI revenues? And we sort of quickly realized, well, you can't just look at the revenues when we're talking about productivity gains. You have to think about efficiency from two sides. There's the revenue side, but there's also, if people are getting, if businesses are getting more productive, is there, higher efficiency and thus, higher margin, lower cost going in because of the AI investment. So we've seen both now on the revenue side, really hard to tell, especially with some of these sort of early methods of monetization of AI when we think about these model providers that we have, like ChatGPT from OpenAI, like Perplexity, like Anthropic. These are private companies. So, there's numbers out there. We know ChatGPT is the biggest. Their revenue last year was, $2 or $3 billion dollars. I mean, that's obviously pales in comparison to the amount of money that's been invested. So we've heard a lot of really positive data points about these, efficiency gains and the better productivity I mentioned before with, some of these developer tools. We've heard large companies that have said, there's one that recently said last year they saved over 1 million developer hours because of their AI dev tools. The question is, did their developers produce an incremental 1 million hours of code, or, what were they doing in that time saved, basically? Where's the, were they more productive? Was there actually a lower cost? Or did they just get that productivity enhancement? So, we're still very much in this debate about monetization. We do think that the gap between spend and monetization is starting to narrow as we see more companies monetizing AI, more companies as they come out of the experimentation phase, really realizing some of these gains. But this remains one of the long-term questions. What's that level of return that companies are going to need to see to continue to invest? We know that these companies are, coming back to where we started the conversation, they see something where they're willing to invest and put up all this capital against what they think AI could be. But the question remains, what are the returns ultimately going to be in the long run? I will just add, one more point on one of the CEOs of one of the major tech companies recently made a really interesting point, which is, the long term, the way that we'll measure the ROI of AI is going to be on, you know, economic productivity, you know, real GDP. And so, you know, is there may be a certain level of, you know, maybe it's a certain level of GDP growth we have to achieve. Maybe it's, you know, something we've looked at is real GDP per worker. This tends to, you know, expand a lot during cycles of technological innovation. You know, the past couple tech cycles with computing with internet, we saw, you know, ranging from, you know, 17 to 30% increases in, you know, real GDP per worker. So, you know, maybe we could see a really big increase like that over, you know, the coming decade plus. And, you know, maybe that's ends up being the way that we, you know, say, okay, AI was a success. But again, it's, yeah, it remains unknown what that benchmark's going to be.
Time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell.
So we talked about industries potentially seeing the most disruption or impact to labor. What about industries that stand to benefit the most from adoption?
Yeah, we think, you know, every industry in some way should be able to benefit from the adoption of AI in different ways and over different time horizons. One of the interesting things that we've seen early on is that the early adopters of AI have largely been the enablers of this technology. So a lot of these technology companies that we're talking about who are, you know, investing a lot of this money, who are building a lot of these solutions, whether it be on the hardware side or the, you know, intelligence layer modeling side as well, and the applications, it's this idea we call, you know, drinking one's own champagne. And so we've seen these, you know, early adopters, again, technology companies, have already realized a lot of these gains. We looked back at one of the ways to look at this is revenue per employee, which we looked at since 2022. Mm-hmm. And we found the communication services sector, which is where, you know, a lot of, you know, internet and social media lives, are they were one of the sectors that saw the most increase in revenue per employee. Another one was financials, but we think that was due more to rate hikes than AI. Okay. But yeah, again, there's opportunity within every industry to adopt AI. It's going to vary a lot, but we've seen, yeah, really positive data points out of a lot of different industries. I read recently about a agricultural hardware company that has lawnmowers that are using AI to, you know, optimize their, you know, routes for farmers, and it reduces the cost for farmer. I mean, there's a lot of innovation going on in a lot of different industries, and it's really interesting to see.
Like a robo vacuum?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It doesn't just bump into the wall constantly. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So we talked about how, you know, AI is being utilized across different industries. What are you seeing where you sit? How is UBS CIO in the research you all do? How are you incorporating AI? How's it affecting what you all do? Or how are you benefiting from it?
Yeah, UBS has been pretty early in adopting a lot of these AI tools and AI use cases that we've been talking about. In the Chief Investment Office, we have a few different tools that have been made available to us. One of them is a suite of chatbots and research assistants that we've been, they're sort of in a beta phase. But these are, you know, we have access to the ChatGPT models through an API that allows us to. We have a few different models that are, you know, one is sort of a general model. It's basically the model that you'd have access to on your phone, other than it doesn't have, you know, internet access. So it's a closed off model. You know, we have one specifically for office products, so it can, you know, go through your email, summarize emails, and you know, send out a calendar invitation. We also are in testing of one that uses CIO and investment bank research, which is interesting. So that was a fun one that got rolled out. You can see, you know, what did this person say about this, and we were able to
sort of know real time whether or not it was accurate. And we also have access now recently to a third party AI software that is specifically geared towards investment research and leverages press releases, filings from companies like, you know, 10Ks and 8Ks, as well as press releases, transcripts, really, you know, any sort of available public information that a company puts out. So that's been interesting to experiment with, you know, for, you know, maybe you're, we're talking about a company that just reported earnings, thinking about what are some of the takeaways, and you want to go pull a quote, and you don't want to open up the transcript and command F and keep looking through keywords to try to find it. You know, this software is, you know, something that can, you know, help us be a little bit more nimble, a little bit quicker and efficient in our research, which is especially useful when, you know, there's a ton of companies that we're covering, obviously. So yeah, there's everyone's sort of going at their own pace with AI, which I think is the case for most people. There's some people who are really embracing it early on, and others who, you know, maybe it's going to be harder to, you know, sort of introduce a new piece to your process. But yeah, early on we've found, you know, the in CIO and at UBS, we've had access to a number of tools that have been, I think, really helpful so far. And yeah, it's good to see, you know, being able to use a lot of these technologies that we talk about all day from an investment sense to actually, you know, have them in the workplace. It helps us understand them a little bit better as well when you're actually using them. Yeah, I'd love to hear maybe from, you know, your perspective on, you know, how financial advisors can use AI, maybe if there's any sort of already applications that you're hearing about, or things that in, you know, in your field that you think people can take advantage of, and maybe any opportunities, you know, in AI that you're excited about.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I feel like it can make us better as a team and more efficient through, I don't know if clients realize all that goes on behind the scenes with somebody calls in to ask a question saying, I want to gift $2 million to a trust for my kids. We then have to go find the expert and find all this information, which UBS has so many resources. It can be challenging to find exactly what you're looking for, but I know that they're working on putting something in place to narrow that down instead of coming up with hundreds of results. So that will reduce the amount of time that we spend doing that. From a note-taking perspective, whenever we have a meeting with a client or a phone call with a client, we are then taking the notes that we from the conversation and then typing them into our computer. If that can become automated and then send out a summary to our team on follow-up items, I'm super excited about that. I mean,
you made an agent for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Note-taking agent.
Yeah. Because that is time-consuming, especially if you're having an hour, two-hour meeting. That's a lot of information that you need to go back and enter in manually. So I'm super excited about the changes that are coming down the road.
Yeah.
So what are the biggest risks from an investment standpoint? And we talked earlier, you asked me about what we hear from clients, and some clients who were around during the tech bubble. I was around then. I sort of was right after I just started my career in this business. How is this different than other tech cycles, if it is different?
Well, there's a lot of risks. Clients should speak with their UBS financial advisor to talk about those risks. But yeah, compared to, I mean, past, when we think about sort of the past tech cycles, I mean, I think a lot of people, I wasn't doing this then, but .com is something that comes to mind for a lot of people. You know, it wasn't long ago we had a tech innovation cycle where there was this new thing that people were getting really excited about. A ton of money was being invested up front. There was all this opportunity. New companies were popping up. There were all these startups at that point in time. And, you know, ultimately, you know, in the long run, a lot of those companies prevailed. You know, they were, you know, some of the largest technology companies today sort of rose from the ashes after, you know, that downturn and post 2002, and you know, are now leading the way even in this innovation cycle. I think, you know, there are key differences for this cycle versus what was going on then. I mean, one of the key ones, I think, is that the companies that are leading the way right now in AI, these are some of the largest, most well-capitalized, you know, really high-quality companies. They have proven track records. They have these really big, you know, customer bases that they've been selling into for a long time. They have very strong balance sheets, in some cases stronger than the U.S. government, higher rated, that is. So, you know, in that respect, it's a little different from maybe some of the more unproven, newer companies from that era that were, you know, there was some sort of financial engineering going on. There was this idea of vendor financing that made things a bit murky. So we think that this cycle, you know, it doesn't mean it's not a risky, you know, investment cycle again, but it does mean, you know, things look a little bit different now. And so there's important lessons, I think, from then as well. Again, we come back to this idea of, you know, the long-term value creation of some of these transformations. I mean, if you think about the, you know, invention of the smartphone, which is ubiquitous now. I mean, everyone has a smartphone, right? And there's different, you can get a phone from a lot of, you know, different manufacturers. But if you think about the ecosystem that created, I mean, the industry is created from just apps. I mean, we have e-commerce now and ride sharing and online banking, streaming media. I mean, these were all industries that were created because of the internet and, you know, because of the smartphone. So, you know, there's important lessons from, you know, past tech cycles. I think like we were talking about before, when you think about past tech innovations, where there's from the labor side, and there's always that fear of, you know, AI, you know, this automation is going to take my job. Right. I think there's also sometimes a similar thinking of, you know, this is overhyped, this is a bubble, and that sort of thing. And so again, time will tell. But, you know, we think this this investment cycle we've seen in AI is being led by really high quality, proven companies. And, you know, valuations can get stretched, but it's, you know, we're not seeing what we saw at that point in time in the last cycle.
I think that's good news.
Yeah, that is good news.
Is there anything investors should think about regarding regulatory considerations?
Yeah, I think that's definitely another key, you know, probably a key part of a key risk as well from the investment side. I mean, again, any new technology, there's going to be regulation that's needed. I think one of the things we've heard a lot about is just, you know, safe and responsible AI use. There's a lot of sort of, you know, misuses of AI that that we've already seen, things like, you know, cloning someone's, you know, voice and misrepresenting them.
Deepfake, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the sort of thing that some of that policy will have to address. And then there's also sort of from the more competitive sort of, you know, national, you know, AI is going to be sort of this national asset, right? It's we have a first mover advantage in the U.S. in AI. A lot of the innovation has come from, you know, companies in the U.S. And so, you know, it's probably going to be, you know, in our national interest to consider that going forward. So, yeah, we think, you know, AI, balancing responsible use of AI without stifling the innovation, you know, we think that's a bipartisan interest. So we do expect to see regulation. There's some being talked about even now. There are some CEOs of major technology companies today are speaking in front of the Senate. So we do expect to see regulation.
But again, we think AI is going to be a priority in the U.S., and we don't think that any regulations are going to do anything to, you know, curtail investment or really try to mm-hmm. To slow innovation in any way.
All right, can I put you on the spot? What's the most interesting use of AI you've heard?
It's a great question. There's a lot of interesting uses of AI. I think one that comes to mind is AI opportunities in healthcare, specifically with drug discovery. One of the things we found is that healthcare is one of the least digitized industries, but one that produces, you know, some of the most data. It's vast amounts of data. And so I was actually at a breakfast this morning where someone was talking about the drug discovery process, and it's, you know, billions of dollars, and it can be, you know, up to a decade to get one drug created. You'd be maybe surprised by, you know, how few drugs are actually invented every year. I think the FDA approved 50 drugs last year. And so, you know, if the opportunity for AI to, you know, speed up some of that, you know, the drug discovery, you know, sort of analyzing these chemicals, you know, simulating how they interact with each other, doing, you know, some of the clinical trials that go on, you know, simulating some of those, you know, cutting down on time and cutting down on cost. I think there's a big opportunity there. There's companies, both, you know, very large companies, but also there are some startups who are working on this exact problem. So I think that's something really interesting. And also, I mean, we sit here talking about, you know, a transformational innovation, and, you know, we talk a lot about the investment opportunity and, you know, productivity increases for businesses, but ultimately, you know, new technologies should, you know, improve the human experience in some regard as well. So I think that's, you know, if we can get positive outcomes in healthcare from AI, I think that's a really good outcome.
So for example, we've been battling, you know, cancer for so long. The AI could help us accelerate to finding a cure potentially down, you know, quicker than we could on our own.
Yeah.
Is that what I'm hearing?
I think there are some people who are trying to do just that. Yeah.
I'm excited about learning more about this and all the changes that AI is bringing to all of us, and want to thank you so much for joining us here today.
Yeah,
and
thank you for having me.
Thanks to everybody for tuning in to your Gateway to Wealth and Fulfillment podcast.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.